Welcome back to Switchcast Live. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. If it ain't true, it better be dang funny. Yes, we are here tonight with Tyler Sanders and Ethan Huffnagel, and with all of you. We appreciate you joining us live, and for those of you hearing us on the audio podcast, not live, we appreciate you as well. Tonight, we've got a full docket, as usual. The automotive news and shenanigans just keeps happening and making awesome discussion content for us. So we're going to try to unpack it and have some fun, some laughs, and maybe learn something along the way. Tonight, we are dangerously getting a little bit into politics, but only because it's automotive related. That is my rule. Everything we discuss on this podcast has to be somewhat tangentially automotive related. So
I feel like we're tiptoeing through a minefield. Like, we can make it to the other side okay, Doug, but we got to work together on this.
We are tiptoeing through a minefield. But okay. We're not going to get there yet. We're not going to lose everybody right off the bat. Let's start. Let's warm it up.
Viewership has gone to zero. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, gosh. You're going to find out who I voted for tonight. No, not really.
Ethan, get the defib. Sorry.
Oh, man. So we like to do a market update, and we're going to do a market update with a couple cars we talked about. We dissected a Diablo Roadster listing on Bring a Trailer a couple weeks ago because we're more talking about, like, kind of how not to list a car for auction. And the biggest reason was that it was photographed with the picture of the engine temperature, the water temperature gauge, at like 300 some odd degrees, like fully buried into the red. And that just did not bode well for the auction. But it sold, it ended up selling for 270 grand. And it was not the only questionable Diablo Roadster that sold. In fact, within a day of that one on Cars and Bids, another yellow one sold for a measly $153,000.
I like that on Bring a Trailer. This is the default thing. This isn't this particular car, but it says, this Lamborghini Diablo got away. Well, I'm not sure if it got away. I think we just left it there for somebody else to deal with.
Right. the yellow one was very obviously a daily driver. You might say a fixer-upper. It needs some TLC. It looked, in my eyes, so janky, you'd be forgiven for thinking it was a kit car. And it's probably... You could probably sink about $250,000 into that to restore it properly. It looked like it had kind of the same attention and modifications given to it that, you know, a Chevy Cavalier 1998 would, some like painted gauge clusters and stuff like that. But, you know, it was presented honestly. We're not trying to throw shade on the seller in that instance. I think the takeaway here is that people will often look at... just like a graph of sales. And they'll say, oh, this one sold on Bring a Trailer for 270. That one sold for 153,000. The Diablo market is down. No, it's not down. You have to actually go through and understand why these cars sold cheap. People allege that the 270K Diablo probably need $100,000 in engine work. The seller claimed that there is no engine damage because he shut the car off immediately after it started overheating. But like two comments before that, he also said that it had been idling for an hour during the photo shoot, and that's why it overheated. So, like...
As if that's an excuse. Like, that's honestly just... That's worse.
Idling for an hour is dangerous. So it just happened to overheat. The fan stopped working at the 59th minute, and you shut it down. Yeah. You were watching that temp gauge the whole time, except when they took pictures of it. So... It was very obvious that nobody was paying attention to the details there. And somebody's... The winning bid was keeping in mind the investment needed. Same thing with the yellow car. And I think the other takeaway, too, is with that yellow car, right? So a lot of people think, oh, man, 153 grand. That is a cheap Diablo. And absolutely it is. If you just want a janky Diablo to look like a hero in, that's a fantastic deal. You can probably cheat and spend $5,000 a year and keep that thing moving. But if you're going to fix it up properly, you're likely going to be upside down because, yes, it is the cheapest Diablo on the market by, well, by exactly $127,000, because the other one is the next cheapest one to sell. But you'll probably put $250,000 into it, and then you're in a bad Diablo fixed up and made better for $400,000, and you could probably just buy a really good one for $400 to $450,000. So, like, there's that law of diminishing returns when you buy a fixer-upper car, that you buy a really cheap example, you're probably not saving money in the long run unless you're a DIYer and you're just going to limp the thing along and drive a cheap example. So,
yeah, there's a very specific niche of people that can make this work. If you've got a YouTube channel, if you want to do all the work yourself, you're in it for the experience of owning this. But if you actually want to own a Diablo, just get the nicest one you can afford. And maybe if this is it, maybe not.
You know, I honestly think we talk about speculators and people running the market up on cars, right? Oh, this group ruined the market. Whatever. See it on the Corvette curmudgeon pages all the time. I mean, the Corvette club pages. But, you know, the YouTubers might actually be responsible for driving janky examples up, because they need content. And there's a lot of competition for these fixer-upper exotic YouTube channels. So you can't just go buy a cheap exotic cheap anymore, because all these YouTubers are making a bunch of ad revenue off of them.
So the values of those cars are set by what's reasonable to pay for something you can continue to make money off of versus something that's a money pit.
Right. Right. Yes.
I would love to be able to buy all these crazy cars super cheap and have the adventure of trying to fix them, but I just don't have the bankroll for that. And I'm not about to start a YouTube channel. Nobody wants to watch that.
You are on a YouTube channel. Come on, you are.
Not technically. I am off camera. I'm only my voice. All right.
Well, season five, Tyler's going to be on camera.
Sneak peek.
Got a lot of changes coming season five. We think all for the best, better, all for the good, more good.
This is going to be definitely more good.
Yeah, I'm going to work on my grammar also. Yeah. So anyway, come stick around. But I mean, stick around now through the commercial too and everything, but also season five. Corvette curmudgeon Hank is not here with us tonight because of the potential of it snowing. But we have a couple of things in his honor. Arun on Instagram sent us this one. Forgive me if I mispronounced your name there. This guy, Tommy Johnson, posted something to the Cars and Coffee South Mississippi group. It was a selfie of him giving the one finger salute with the caption, quote, "Cars and Coffee show is horrible. No cash or trophies to be won. Judges don't know nothing. I shine my vet for nothing."
Oh, it's got 4,000 responses or reactions.
I have to admit, I did not read a single reaction. I just looked at the screenshot and laughed, and I'm like, okay, this is going on the podcast. But I feel like this has to be a parody. Everybody knows there's no judges at Cars and Coffee.
Oh, yeah. It looks like somebody found a photo of somebody. It's slightly blurry. It's obviously a guy that looks like he'd be into Corvettes. You know, it's people like making the jokes. I laughed. Right. I don't think it's real, but right. I laughed.
It's a very good parody, but it's almost too parody to be real. But you never know with the Corvette guys. Anyway, we all got a kick out of it, and so did the internet. But the anti-curmudgeon Corvette was posted on Manheim this week, and it's a 2023 Corvette Z06 with 82,000 miles on it.
Whew. And is it brown?
I think so.
I know somebody
1 year old
who has a metallic brown C8. It's awesome. It looks
great.
Did
he put 82,000 miles on it last year?
Holy no. Where did he go?
I don't know, like 10 cannonball attempts.
Oh,
we're
going to
find
gosh.
Out in 6 months that our record was broken by a brown Z06. The crazy thing is, though, so Carfax has almost no information on this car other than basically four reports. It sold new, it hit a deer, and then it was for sale at 82,000 miles. That's it. There's no emissions test. There's no registration. I mean, it's 1 year old, I guess. But like no oil changes, no service at the dealer. That, I mean, that would track for a Corvette owner yeah. not to change their oil.
Oil's only been in the car for 8 months. I don't need to change it.
Right. It says it's annual service. Yeah. I didn't make it to a year. So I tried to look up what it, so I couldn't find anything else other than the screenshot from Mannheim, but Mannheim didn't have a sale result. But anyway, if anyone knows what that thing sold for, it'd be very interesting. And a lot of people were complaining too about the Z06's popping motors, but apparently this one did just fine with 82,000 miles.
All it needs is some goopy old oil and it'll be just fine. Stay together.
An event update or notification, I guess, for those of you into great car shows and or cannonball stuff, myself and Arnie Toman will be taking the Fraud Taurus down to Celebration, Florida this weekend. Kind of a last minute thing, but if you're in the area and you want to see a bunch of supercars and movie cars and celebrities, other, I mean, present company not included, but like real celebrities, but also like D-list automotive celebrities, we're going to have the car at the Celebration Exotic Car Festival on Saturday. So come on down for that. That's going to be a really interesting event. The owner of the Countach from the Cannonball Run movie is one of the founders of this event. It's a charity event. It's really pretty crazy. They have an REO Speedwagon concert on Friday night. They have some famous comedian, I can't remember who it is, on Saturday night. They have a Concours on Saturday, a rally on Sunday, track day Monday, Tuesday. Like, this is a big thing. So the Cannonball Run Countach will be there and the Fraud Taurus. So that come on down sweet. For that. Yeah, I think it's free for spectators. So
nice.
The way every show should be.
The Switchcast, as always, is brought to you by Boxcast. Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose, to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/boxcast to start your free trial.
And if you're just joining us, we are back here at Switchcast. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with Tyler Sanders and our producer and comment screener, Ethan Huffnagel. That's right. If you have any comments or questions, throw them in the flow of wherever you're watching live, and we'll do our best to get to the best or highest paying ones throughout the night. And we do have our question of the week coming up as well. And if you like our podcast, or even if you don't, please leave us a 5-star review. Like it, share it, subscribe wherever you are listening or watching. Feel free to download the audio podcast. We're on all major audio platforms. And that helps us out with the algorithms. It helps more people see our podcast. We've been growing like crazy, and we are very appreciative of you for making that happen, because we do not do any marketing per se at all. It's all organic. So we love and appreciate that you love and appreciate us enough to share it. So please continue to do that. Before we get into the main topic of the night, maybe we should go there, and then we'll come back out of it with on a lighter note. How about that?
I like the sound of that.
We've got an internal Switchcast caption contest here that we're going to get to a little bit later, having to do with a Mustang hearse, but we'll set that up. But what I wanted to talk about this week, we're going to tread lightly here. I found an article this week on NBC4i.com talking about a Columbus, Ohio program that connects residents with free car repairs. Now, this program has been around since 2020, and it is receiving a $500,000 boost in its fourth year. Let's get into this program a little bit. So it provides free repairs on taillights, headlights, turn signals, and other small issues to low-income Columbus residents. They define low income as 200% of the federal poverty level. So, for example, I believe a two-person family, however you define that, two-person family, the poverty level is $20,000. So if you make $40,000 or less as a two-person household, you would qualify for free car repairs. And it scales up depending on how many people are in your family, up to like $65,000, I think, would be the 200% mark for somebody with a five-person family. So city council voted last Monday or 2 weeks ago to invest $500,000 into the program's continuation. There's essentially two authorized repair shops that are vetted by this program in order to do the repairs. It looks like a Honda dealership, Lindsay Honda, and Mr. Transmission / Milex Complete Auto Care. And one of the main driving forces of this program is, according to the city attorney, Zach Klein, quote, "This started as an idea about how we can eliminate unnecessary police interactions, and what better police interaction than a traffic stop that's really driven by poverty. These are folks who don't have operable taillights or headlights. So the reason they're getting pulled over is a violation of law because they don't have the money to fix it." End quote. They note the program has helped 302 residents since its launch in 2020, with a majority of participating residents being black and female. Now, why do they have to go into that?
Yeah, I'm not sure why that matters, truthfully.
I'm going to pause briefly here and then move on, because I don't want to make it about this, but I feel like they have made it about this. If they want people to stop being racist and sexist, stop making government programs about race and sex.
Yeah, I was reading some of the same stuff you were, and it just doesn't, like, as a statistic, I guess, cool if you're like into data or whatever, like some report, but that didn't really, that's not necessarily for public consumption,
well,
I would think.
Talking about statistics and data, at no point, at least in these articles and the legislation that I found, have they given us statistics and data on how this is like reducing crime or reducing traffic stops or anything like that. It's their idea is that it's reducing unnecessary police interactions, but, you know, I talked to a cop this afternoon about this whole thing, and I was like, what is this? And he goes, it's a bunch of BS. Like, let's just think about it logically for a second. Columbus City Police, like Cleveland City Police, are so friggin' busy. They don't have time to stop people for taillights out. Like, that's not a thing. It's posturing. He basically said, like, it's a bunch of like woke BS that they're projecting this idea that they're helping, but they're not really doing anything. Right now, I want to back up before I make this way too political. I love this idea. I do love this idea. And I've heard it from other people before. I've heard it from my friend Frank, who runs King's Auto Service. His idea was to do it as a ministry through his company to people who are in need. I've heard it from a friend and listener of ours, Coach Connie. She has thought about doing a charitable organization for single women who need help with car repairs, more as a bent of like not all women are stereotypically car inclined. And there's the kind of assumption that a lot of car repair shops will take advantage of women by selling them stuff that they don't need, because it's like, well, it's an easy target. You don't understand cars, so I'm going to upsell you big time. Right. And I think those are very, very noble ideas. My problem with this is that it's the government doing it. The reason I have a problem with the government doing it is here's why. Since its launch, the average cost for repairs under Project Taillight has been around $1,600. We're talking headlights, taillights, and other minor repairs. Now, the investment cap or max per vehicle has been set at $3,200. I daily drive a Porsche and it doesn't cost me $3,200 a year.
Well, and I think from everything I've found, I don't know if you found anything different. This is specifically around the lights, headlights, taillights, license plate lights, some safety inspection tasks, and like topping off of fluids.
But no, but it's while you're in there stuff too. That's the thing. They're covering other repairs that these automotive shops find. So I found some legislation from the second year of this, and they had already run out of money. The contract with Mr. Transmission had a $23,000 contract, and they declared an emergency to ensure services continue uninterrupted through the agreed upon project period and requested a $15,000 modification. A state or whatever, they declared an emergency, a governmental emergency, to get more money for people to fix their cars. This is the problem with government, is they have this, they think what they're doing is so important that they can just, I'm going to wield my power. This is an emergency. No, it's freaking not. It's a car repair. Here's another problem with the government doing it. Let's see. Where is this? This contract modification is funded through a 2021 Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Subaward from Franklin County Board of Commissioners, Office of Justice Policy and Programs. There's all these friggin' governmental organizations in this. They're probably costing the city more money for the people managing this dang legislation than you could just, like, a good charitable organization could just pay for this to be done and do it efficiently.
How do you even fit all those names on a check? Is it one of those big, like, comic checks that they give to these shops when they get the money?
In unrelated note, okay, so the investment cap or max per vehicle has been set at $3,200. In potentially unrelated news, I looked up the average cost, annual repair cost for a Nissan Altima, and it's $483.
I was wondering how we got to this much money, unless they're replacing entire headlights and entire taillights. But even then, like, on our... On like my 911, I think the headlight's like $2,500, which obviously I don't want to. This is an obscene amount.
You could
of money.
Buy a used one.
Yeah.
You ready? You ready? This is why I don't like government doing it. You know how we got to this amount of money? Is that anytime you have quote unquote government money, which is not government money, it's taxpayer money. Let's be clear about that. Even though the articles written about this made it seem like it was the city's money. No, it's the city residents' money being moved around to other people. Whenever you have government money being handed out, and I don't want to allege anything about the two shops that have these contracts, but this is just how government works. When you have government money being handed out, costs burgeon. Look at the cost of healthcare. Look at the cost of school, education, higher education, college.
Oh, gosh.
Look at the student loan crisis. Look at the cost of education. It has vastly outpaced inflation. I think 7% a year for the past few decades increase in cost. Why? Because it's unlimited guaranteed government money. So you do the same thing with car repairs, and all of a sudden it's, oh man, we got to buy a brand new part, not a used part. I guarantee you there's not a person in this legislation and in these government departments overseeing this that have any knowledge about cars, that are reviewing the repair bills to say, oh man, this is way inflated, right? A good, small, efficient, charitable organization would be going, all right, let's see where we can find used parts, or can we fix this with duct tape, right?
Yeah.
Or if a repair shop is doing this out of charity, like, they're going to do a good fix as efficiently as they can because it's coming out of their pocket. And newsflash, if the government isn't taking this money out of our taxes, then there's more money for charitable organizations and for businesses to do these kind of things. But I guarantee you, for every $3,200 per janky car, with all due respect, if you're like, if you're making 20 grand a year, you shouldn't be driving a car that's worth more than $3,200. That's what I drove when I was broke. I drove a $2,000 Saturn, and I also drove a $2,000 Toyota Matrix. So my wife said, careful when you talk about this because you're a little bit out of touch. I recognize that. But that doesn't mean I haven't been there. I've been there. I've been broke. I have lived off of $1,500 a month for everything. Rent, car repair, insurance, food, everything. I know what it's like to be there, and I figured it out. $3,200 a year is freaking insane. And I guarantee you that that's costing the taxpayers double that because of the inefficiency of government to be able to manage this friggin' program. They could just buy them cars for that amount.
Can you even get a car for $3,200 anymore?
I'm sweating. I'm taking off my sweater.
Doug's getting a little intense. No, I think you kind of, you said something earlier that you like this idea, and I, on the surface, do as well, because I think, you know, it's very easy to be in the position where you're talking about, where a significant car repair can break you. It can like cause extreme financial difficulty.
Absolutely.
Like, and you know, it's obviously no place that someone should be in where they need to financially strain themselves to just be able to get to the places they need to go. I'd almost rather wish that in a city they would focus more on infrastructure for public transportation or other things. Now, granted, I will acknowledge $500,000 towards infrastructure is probably not that much. Things are expensive.
But you make a good point, though, because the same justification is given towards public transportation. So it's kind of like, okay, if the government's spending a certain amount of money, and this is not me being not having a lack of empathy towards people who have real needs, who are struggling to make ends meet, who are working, who need to get to work, who have kids that they need to support. I absolutely empathize with them. And, you know, my wife and I support those people directly and indirectly through our own, you know, volunteering and charitable giving. I don't want to do it in a forced way through the government. But what I'm saying is, if you're already pouring into public transportation, saying this is to meet the needs of low income people who have those needs, then focus on that. Don't say, oh yeah, we're also going to pay to fix their cars. Like, there is a bus. There are trains. It is a big city that does exist.
And I do think this is a problem that has been created for us in a sense. You know, we are a very car heavy country.
Sure.
It's very like you and now, obviously we don't live in a major metropolitan area like Columbus, but like you and I could not exist without a car where we live. We couldn't do anything.
Right. We could not exist without an internal combustion vehicle.
Well, I think that's a different thing. Yes. Very true. But you know, it's almost like this is the solution to this problem is almost chicken and egg. If the solution is a more connected space for those living in a metropolitan area, that takes a lot of money and time and investment. That doesn't fix the immediate problem because it takes time. So then things like this could help, maybe, if we had statistics and knew. I don't know. But it's like, I've been wrestling with this for a bit because it's kind of hard to digest. There's lots of different factors to consider. Some of them make me feel good and some of them don't. But
here's the other thing that kind of chaps my ass here too. I'm sorry, you had a good point, but I'm just, my mind is turning here.
I'm letting you think.
I keep going back to the $3,200 average repair bill, right? If people are like the amount of car you own should be scaled to how much money you make, right? There's no shame in any game. Right. I don't want to look down on anybody because of what they make. But if you're making 20 grand a year and you have a $2,000 car, it shouldn't cost $500 to replace a headlight. It should be a car that you can replace the headlight bulb or the taillight bulb for $2.
Oh my God. When I first thought of this, I was like, how are they spending $1,600 on bulbs?
Right.
Like, what's going on? I know it's been a while since I bought a headlight, but
if if you're making 20, 40 grand a year and you're leasing a car that's brand new and super expensive and has sealed beam headlights and LED tail lights, well, there's your problem. Let's get them into a budgeting program or something that, like, you know, give a man a fish he can eat for a day, give a man a fishing pole, teach a man how to fish, he can provide for himself the rest of his life. Like, let's solve the root problem and help people find a way out of where they're at. Because ultimately, welfare-type programs just enable the continuation of poverty. They don't actually get people to be self-sufficient and to succeed on their own, which is what we all want for our fellow man, is to see them succeed and to have independence. Yeah. I had another... I think the other point, too, is the basis of this program ultimately was not to help people get to work. It isn't like, oh, man, your engine's on its way out. You need to get to work. It's, we don't want you to get stopped by police. So let's fix your taillight. Okay, well, just change the law then. Just make those non-violations.
Well, I did think, too, that something else I really like about this is I am all for reducing unnecessary police interaction, both for the people and the police. I think the cops
are, too. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody involved. If we just don't have to bother, but also
let's
not
stop
sacrifice.
Enforcing speeding, then. That is an unnecessary police interaction.
So that's what I was going to... I'm coming around to that. You know, if obviously while still keeping the roadways safe and making sure that somebody's derelict car is not affecting themselves or others and, you know, yada, yada, whole thing. But like, I'm all for reducing unnecessary police interaction.
I would argue, though, that tires are more important to safety than headlights and taillights.
The tires I see on the road, Doug, sometimes.
Absolutely. Tires and brakes should be number one, and or rust holes. Right? Like you're only... grip with the road is your four contact patches. And unfortunately, most, you know, low income people who are struggling to maintain their cars are not going to replace their tires unless they're broken, and broken means popped. But as car guys, we know that broken tire really is like, if it's on the cords or if it, you know, is worn out such that you don't have proper grip in the rain or emergency situations, then that's dangerous to a lot of people.
Well, it's just, for me, that kind of goes back to, we've just made a society requiring you to have a car in making it very difficult to exist without one. That it's, we talked before with like the Ohio Institute potentially thinking about the app to help you learn how to drive and everything. It's like, driving is not necessarily something that should just be given to everyone. You should have to earn it, because you are piloting a many thousand pound vehicle around the road that can kill people. But at the same time, we need it to get places. So it's kind of flirting with that line,
right?
Of like, it's required, but, and you could have a terrible non-existent life without it. You could be on the street, you know, I don't know, but it's, this is a very complicated topic.
Yes.
I think.
Yes. The long and short of it is, it's a great idea. Government shouldn't be doing it. And, you know, but you know what government could do well, right? We talk about like catalytic converter thieves. That's a major problem, major economic impact. I feel like that's something the government could do well, because if you wanted to fix the problem of catalytic converters being stolen, just put the EPA on it.
Oh, God, the EPA scares me, and I'm not even right in the business.
If the EPA put half the effort into catching catalytic converter thieves as they do chasing dealers and shops that modify niche market cars, they could make a real difference, like a real difference. Yeah. Except they don't care, because the victims of catalytic converter thievery are already required to bring their cars into compliance. So they'll penalize a person double, because, well, your cats got stolen, but also now you're in violation of law. So you have to pay to get new cats. So they feel like they're saving the world because they're saving people from unnecessary carbon dioxide. But, you know,
the cats are so expensive.
Yeah.
It is depressing.
I have a diesel excursion that could do with a cat delete, but if I do it, I risk jail time. But if I leave in a bad neighborhood, you know, somebody could just take them, but I'd probably get in more trouble than they would, and they're the thieves.
Oh, yeah, because if you're driving around with a... even if somebody took it, you can probably still get cited, or...
Yeah,
I guess that doesn't need
your exhaust.
Check.
No, I didn't. Yeah, so, I don't know. But, yeah, if the government wanted car guys to get behind what they do. Just redirect the EPA to something like that. Chase down catalytic converter thieves. Anyway, on a lighter note, thank you for the three of you who are still here. Our producer's rolling his eyes. Mustang Hearst. We found this picture on Facebook this week. And it is exactly what you would think. This is the beauty of it. I don't really have to paint a picture for anyone. It was a Mustang hearse. That's right, a Ford Mustang with a hearse body on it.
I found out I can do overlays on Boxcast, so I'm actually going to throw... I did some research into this.
Wow.
This week, so I'm actually going to throw up the photo here so everyone can look at it.
Oh, my goodness.
Us.
We are real techie
it's
tonight.
It's pretty big, guys.
All right.
Come on,
so I'm excited.
I texted this the guys, good. And I'm like, all right, this is ripe for some good puns here. So we're going to have a caption contest for this. And again, if you're watching still and you want to throw yours in, there may be a reward for the best one. But yeah, I'll start it out with a really, really weak one. It probably really stinks in there. Smells kind of musty. You could call it the Mustiang.
I think they should call it the Morgstang.
Ooh.
It's not good.
Ford, I think Ford in this instance really stands for found on road dead.
Oh, man. I want to know if the coffin area that was constructed in the back is made out of the same garbage plastic as the rest of the interior. Like, is it just like clattering down the road?
Oh, man. I think the Mustang, this Mustang hearse, it's like the automotive version of the Grim Reaper. But if you put like a super hot, like supercharged Coyote motor in it, it could be the Grim Sleeper.
Oh, my God. You know, it is kind of like you kind of kill two birds with one stone. You take your Mustang to the car show and then you have a way to get people away from the car show.
Oh, yeah. Crash and carry.
Oh, man.
You know what the empty return trip from the cemetery is called? Deadheading it.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. I think we're beating a dead horse. Horse.
Yeah, the Mustang is a horse, not a hearse there, Doug.
It's both.
I want to know how they extended the wheelbase on this thing. Like, it looks like somebody made, like, those Cadillac flower cars that kind of look like El Caminos. Mm-hmm. They did that to a Mustang, but they just plonked a hearse top on top of it. But it's like the really like basic black one, not this fancy stuff we've seen on some of the Japanese hearses. I wonder what a fancy American hearse would look like.
Cadillac. I think there was one. There was like a Cadillac DeVille or something like that with a big, the funky Japanese temple on it. It was on, we did this for the appraiser.
We did, because there was the one that really kind of went for bonkers money on cars and bids. And then that was the actual Toyota Century. Then there was a Cadillac that was, oh yeah, it's a Fleetwood. There it is. I see.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, goodness, yeah. Yikes.
But if you want to make sure not to get hit by or be a customer, involuntary customer of the Mustang Undertaker vehicle, you know what they say. Don't look a drift hearse in the mouth.
Asphalt Serpent in YouTube chat says the Undertake Over.
That's a good one.
Which I like quite a lot. And Switchcast is brought to you by Celebrity Machines. Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows, such as Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates, as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout. I would say the fastest cannonball run ever until the Z06 guy posts his time.
Oh, yes. Yes.
We did have a VLM Chris in YouTube chat ask for the last 8 of the VIN, which I had provided, and it looks like Their theory is that it was a GM test mule. There's a couple of service records at GM service ops, whatever that means. But that might explain why it's not on Carfax.
Pretty cool.
So either way, somebody might have gotten a deal on that.
Sure. Oof. Mule hit a deer. Who won?
I think the mule did.
Let's do Scaminator. We haven't done that one in a while,
yes.
Or at least not in our original format, which is where Tyler reads a listing and I will yell or hit the drum or whatever when I recognize that it's a scam.
I'm so ready to be sad. Are you ready to be sad?
Why do we have to be sad?
Oh yeah. We don't know if this is a scam.
I'm happy. I love catching scammers. Alleged
All right.
Scammers.
This was posted on the Porsche 911 buy and sell group on Facebook. Hi, selling my grandfather's 1983 Porsche 911 Targa. Run and drives good. Nice car for its age. Garage kept all its life, selling due to illness. Have a clean Florida title in hand. Serious buyers only. Asking price $42,500.
Wait, that's the joke thing. Yeah, I mean, that is a joke, but that's...
I wish it wasn't a joke, though.
That is quite low.
That is really low.
That it?
Yeah. I also added punctuation, but this was just one long run-on sentence.
That's a tough one. There is obviously, anytime something is underpriced, it is a almost dead giveaway that it's a scam, but not always, because, you know, the reason scammers scam is because there are lots of legitimate listings well underpriced. If there weren't, dealers wouldn't be in business. The selling due to illness and grandfather thing is kind of the other dead giveaway. Again, these things can happen, but a common trick of scammers is that they will play on your emotions, your sense of empathy, to get you to overlook other obvious grievances. And I'm sure if you inquired about it, they would use their typical scammer language, and it would be very apparent very quickly that it was a scam. But you know, there's a couple other things in the listing about the person that were, you know, obvious that it wasn't real. But yeah, that's underpriced, selling for somebody else, and playing off of the illness or something like that. That's 3 for 3 on that one.
Did you check out the comments on this at all?
No, I did not.
Okay. I wonder if anybody was calling him out, or if it was just
money
briefly.
Oh my God! Yeah, no, you money people were calling him out. Yeah, yeah. I didn't pour through them.
I
perused them briefly. Wall of Shame this week is a fun one. Somebody posted on Instagram. I'm not even going to identify him because I feel like he only did it for attention. He, she, whoever it was, said essentially to the effect of, responding to one of my listings on my account, said, oh yeah, this guy goes on VinWiki to talk about shady / you know, scamming buyers and sellers, and then turns out to be one himself.
Womp womp.
Yeah. So I responded and said, okay, I don't know who you are. I don't think we've ever done business, but I will sit by the phone Monday at 11 a.m. Here's my phone number, and wait for you to call me and complain about whatever transaction you had with us or why you posted this. Because if there's a problem, apparently I don't know about it, but you like trolling our Instagram page. And guess what happened or didn't happen Monday at 11 a.m.? That's right. No phone call. So I'm all about free speech, but when you needlessly and incorrectly, dishonestly troll my account on Instagram, you're going to get the ban. So he gone. He can never post again.
And so, he's out of here.
Yeah.
Question of the week is brought to you, as always, by Nuts for Sticks. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles, because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick theme shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That is nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST. Our question of the week is something that we brought up either last week or the week before. It was submitted to us through switchcast.live. And those of you that do not know, that is the website for all things Switchcast. You can get the latest updates, latest podcasts, and submit a question to ask Doug, and me maybe, but mostly Doug. He's the opinion we actually care about. So this one comes
just
to
the,
us.
The strong opinion.
This right one comes to us from frequent YouTube chat attendee, Fanfic Rocks, who asks, this is a long one, so buckle in. Is it possible to do an intercontinental cannonball run from the furthest eastern point in Ireland, or at least the easternmost town, to the furthest eastern town in the UK, to the furthest eastern town or point in China or Japan, without going through conflict zones or areas the State Department has labeled a no-go? A major pathway to do this would be to follow a couple of continental highway systems for both Europe and Asia. That would take forever.
It would take a long time. I'm not sure I want to know the answer to that. I did a little bit of searching, and there was one in particular I wanted to highlight that has been done. It was a long time ago. So international conflict zones are, of course, always changing. So it depends what decade you ask this question. But so I initially searched for Eurasian race, which I did not get the expected results I was thinking. It was more about, you know, intermarital, you know, children
oh,
of
my.
Yeah.
That's not what I would have expected at all.
Right. But it makes sense now that I look at
yeah,
it going, oh,
I guess so.
Yeah, duh.
Yikes. You're probably on a list now. But
there's also lots of people who swim between Europe and Asia. That's a thing.
Swim where? It's all connected.
I don't know. There's some river, something they swim between. And yeah, I literally didn't care enough to read beyond that because I would never do it. But the one article I wanted to highlight that I think is super interesting, and it sort of answers this question, but not really, because it was 24 years ago. But there is a great story about these two gentlemen, Gary Sowerby and Ken Langley, who were from Canada, and they took an old school Volvo wagon and they drove around the world. They set the Guinness World Record for the fastest circumnavigation of the world by car. Took them 3 years to prep and only 74 days to finish.
Whew.
Yes.
Of course it's a Volvo 240, though.
Yeah.
Those things are indestructible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, anytime you do something like this, the rules are kind of like, okay, well, what counts, what doesn't count? Because you really don't actually hit every single place. You don't drive everywhere. You take ferries. You put your car in a plane. And the next person to do it might do it differently. And it might vary by like 1,000 or 2,000 miles or more. So it's kind of a choose your own adventure thing. And I think that's the real answer to the Europe Asia cross continental race. The politics are always going to be changing. I don't think it's possible to not run into potential roadblocks with, you know, different countries and customs and stuff like that. And heck, when you might leave, everything might be fine. And halfway through, there's a war declared. Like, you just,
yeah,
you don't know. But the cop-out answer is that half the fun of planning any sort of adventure like that, or half the fun of the adventure, half the fun of Cannonball is the planning itself. A lot of people want a recipe. Making the recipe up and figuring it out as you go is half the fun. Christopher Michaels, another VinWiki guy, is one of the best people on the planet for planning crazy adventures like that. And another friend, John Ficarra, was looking into doing, so he had planned the 2904, which was a race from New York to San Francisco. It was about 2,904 miles. And he was going to do the 29400, which was a drive around the world. And it never came to fruition, partly because of the complexities of navigating the Asian part of this with all the different communist countries and customs and potential war zones and stuff like that. Like, it just gets really, really risky. So that's a choose your own capital A adventure there if you decide to embark upon it.
Seriously, yeah. No, at least the United States is one like whole thing. I know the states have their different laws and everything, but it's very different crossing borders. I mean, even on some of the old Top Gear trips, they show them trying to cross borders into other countries, and it doesn't go very well sometimes.
Right.
Especially with the whole TV crew and everything for them. So, well, thank you very much for that question, Fanfic Rocks.
Appreciate your continued and loyal viewership. Let's go to the shrewd negotiator.
Yes.
Said it right.
There it is. Hey, there's not a first time for everything, but we're struggling tonight. Alrighty.
This speak also, for yourself. I'm doing just fine.
Well, you weren't before the podcast. This also comes to us from the Porsche 911 buy and sell group. There's a VIN that's the first thing listed, which while I appreciate it that it's there, I'm not going to read that to you. 76,000 miles, clean title. Please note, wheels and custom exhaust is not included in the prices.
What is it? What's the car?
Oh, hey, I should read that first. I had a whole...
Yeah, who's struggling?
Yeah, me now. All right, this is a 2009...
Tyler, everybody.
2009 Porsche 911 Turbo for $87,500.
Not bad.
But yeah, wheels and custom exhaust, not included in the price. However, for an additional cost, they can be included, which is usually how that works. I'm also curious to see if they're going to take it off. Like, if the exhaust is on the car, are you going to pay somebody to swap it off for the stock one?
You know, to that end, I had a friend who was trying to buy a car from a dealer who shall remain nameless. But he was a shrewd negotiator. Is no more. He was trying to buy a car, and the dealer wanted to charge my friend like $1,500 extra for this exhaust system for like installation or whatever to include it. And my friend is like, dude, I'm looking at the underside photos you sent me. It's already on the car. Like, you're going to take it off if I don't pay you extra to leave it on.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
He didn't buy the car.
Alrighty, back to this this clean title Porsche we got here. This is, I feel like I have to get my pompous voice out. Introducing a meticulously maintained 2009 Porsche 911 Turbo, boasting an impressive 650 bhp. This stunning vehicle has extensive service and repair records, leaving no expense spared, with total expenditure exceeding $58,000. The last 2009 Turbo model, belonging to the Metzger Generation GT1 dry sump race engine, is highly sought after, and its rarity ensures consistent depreciation in value, making it an exceptional investment opportunity.
Hold on a second. Hold on. If I had the John Madden flag, whatever, the football like, flag thing, I'd be throwing it right now. Flag on the play. He said it's an exceptional investment opportunity with consistent appreciation. But the paragraph before, he said he had spent $58,000 in service.
You are correct.
That math doesn't math.
Yeah, math ain't mathin'.
He's selling it for 87 grand, and he spent 58 grand in service. So he's selling it for $30,000.
And I'm pretty sure this was a bit more expensive than that when it was new.
Right.
Or whenever this person bought it.
Right.
It is also a Tiptronic.
You know, and that definitely not. That does not guarantee consistent appreciation.
And there's even more to the description. I'm not going to bother to read you. It's like from some like promotional material, I swear, for this. But I swear to God, it is always the guys with the tips that have the fluffiest descriptions. Because I think they're trying to distract you from what they're trying to buy.
Right. It's like the salvage title guys, right? Like, yes. Oh, it's super rare. Look at this spec salvage title.
Yeah. And like, honestly, if a Tiptronic is what you need or what you want, great. It's just not as valuable.
Right.
Not as desirable, which means it's not as valuable.
He started out well. He was talking about what he had put into the car. He was starting with specifics, but then he just had to go down the investment route. It is not a friggin' investment. It's a bad investment. Okay.
Yikes. Apparently didn't do a good pompous voice because Devin Ruckus says that's movie narration voice, so I might be leaving Switchcast to get a career in trailer narration.
I thought it was very good either way. Pompous enough.
Trailer narration, it's one step above trailer park narration.
Ew.
No.
No? No, sorry. Now I'm getting fired by Ethan.
No, he doesn't like mine. Oh my goodness. Okay. Let's do the props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars, which will bring to a close the regularly recorded segment of our podcast. But for those of you still watching live after our diatribe earlier on, yes, if you haven't unsubscribed, canceled us, stick around for live Q&A. We call it Tip Talk after the session. So, props and flops brought to you by Switch Cars.
And Switch Cars, as you know, is the enthusiast's dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. And Doug, there is one choice for a pick of Switch Cars inventory this week. Here. And if you don't do this...
1997 Porsche 993 with a 3.8 liter Patrick Motorsports built engine. It's got houndstooth center sport seats, ocean blue metallic over beige interior. And that's right, the houndstooth is actually color matched to the exterior and interior color combination. 996 sport seats, actually, and they're the hardback painted sport seats with ocean blue metallic painted backs, roof steering wheel, Bilstein PSS9s, upgraded suspension. It is a beauty. It is a very mild, daily drivable Outlaw, and it is hot. Oh, and it only has 35,000 original miles.
Doug, if I mention Switchcast, do I get like 50% off? Is that how that works?
No.
Darn it.
You get a $1,000 discount when mentioning discount code Switchcast.
Oof. It is. So I've been drooling over it all night.
We're going to do double flops and props of the week. The really quick flop and prop of the week. Flop of the week is Haggerty sort of kills the Detroit Concours. That's right. They bought out the Detroit Concours a couple years ago and canceled it this year. It is no more. We don't know why, but they said it's to make it better. I don't know. I don't usually get divorced to make my marriage better, but, you know, whatever.
And don't companies that declare bankruptcy usually say it's to increase efficiency and reorganize the team or whatever?
Yeah, something like that. Well, Haggerty's doing just fine, but I don't know. Maybe their growth at all costs model is coming at a cost. In other news, the Northville Concours, which is also in Detroit, was started by a kid in high school, and it is doing just fine. In fact, it's thriving. So a kid in high school is beating a publicly traded company at executing the Detroit Concours. Well, I guess they executed. They but
need to get that Mustang back in here.
Right. prop of the week is to VinWiki, our favorite YouTube channel. They hit 2 million subscribers this week, so yay.
I wish I had little air horn, like, burr, 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 like I don't know. That or that.
That'll do.
All right,
our flops and props bonus round here is I decided to do, what's that?
So, that's exciting. What?
Ethan is very traumatized.
The excitement was not palpable.
After
people tell me that, but I'm pumped, man.
Ethan was about to cancel the show in that political diatribe earlier, but
I didn't do anything.
Look, I had to pull him away from the power cord to this whole thing. So
it was about cars. It was about cars.
I'm with you, man. Say what you got to say. Let the people know.
Listen, I don't fault anyone for disagreeing. This is an opinion podcast. Absolutely. We're just here to chat and share opinions. So
that's right.
Whatever. Okay, so flop of the week. We're going to share some listener reviews, props and flops. Some of the feedback we've received recently.
I got a haircut, I promise.
So did I. My 7-year-old did not like it. No. Got up this morning. Why'd you cut your hair like that again?
Again. Just roasted. Again. Absolutely.
I didn't cut it, your mom did. All right. Quote, Doug hates Carvana, just FYI.
We didn't even talk about them tonight.
But this is from over the last month or so. But just so you know, I am going to swallow my pride. I am not going to respond to any of these. I'm just going to read them.
Nice.
I'm not going to defend myself.
For those of you keeping track, the Carvana stock is down 10% in the last 5 days.
Oh. Is it 10% from what? What was it? 90, right? Last week?
Yeah, so it's at 82.
Gotcha.
Ish.
Quote, the amount of falsity in everything you just said, absolutely mind-blowing. A scam? How? The hundreds and hundreds of cars on the road that have conversions would say otherwise. This is regarding EAG. I've followed EAG since the conception of the Scuderia. There are a few customers that had a bad experience and it's being blown up, then it's just so many. That he went on for another two paragraphs.
Quote, whoa.
You're just jealous that the Tesla minivan is faster than your Porsche for 2/3 the money.
There's a Tesla minivan?
It's two-thirds the money of a Porsche.
Did I go into a coma? Oh, Doug's not responding, so Ethan, you and I can just like, this is our show now.
Here we go.
You know, maybe that guy has a point now.
Yeah. More of that.
We're going off the rails.
Sorry.
It's good. Quote, I disagree, and I don't have the energy to discuss it.
Oh, that's a good comment, though.
I like that.
So many things in my life, I'm like, I disagree with that, but my God, I can't be bothered.
Yeah, wrong, but...
Okay. Props of the week. The reviews are in. Here are some of the wonderful things our viewers have said recently, and we thank you. Quote, best car-focused podcast in the world.
Oh, in the world.
The world?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Somebody said that, and I didn't pay them to.
We did it.
And it wasn't Mom. And definitely wasn't Erin, because I don't think she would. She doesn't hold that opinion. Quote, love the shows, guys. You have made me a huge fan. I probably should stop binge eating while binge watching. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, you're good.
Look, snacks are essential.
It's only an hour. Quote, listening to the Mexican Stig talking in circles about boomers, vets, and porchas is my new favorite pastime.
Love us a good porcha.
Yeah.
Quote, too GD good for... I got lost here. Too GD good of a show for this few comments. Come on, people, keep up the good.
We do have the good here.
We got more good coming at you.
Oh, yeah. Stay tuned. Wicked funny. Wicked funny. I got to read it in the main accent. Wicked funny and good topics. I subbed like a tool. Plus, got to support a fellow Mena.
That was good. Oh, yeah. We don't have the pine cones out tonight for that.
I couldn't find them. Anyway, thank you all for joining us. Please stick around if you're watching live for Tip Talk. You can roast me. You can say whatever you want. You can ask questions and we will answer. Thank you to my co-host and official supplier of banter, Tyler Sanders, our producer, Ethan Huffnagel, our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.